What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another brand new Rugby Muscle Podcast. I'm your host, as always, TJ. And in today's episode, which is episode 120, we are joined by Tom Savage, who just finished playing his final... He played it on Saturday, but he played his final game for Gloucester Rugby on Saturday in the semi-final playoff against Saracens. Tom just finished his career just shy of 200 appearances for Gloucester. And I say just finished his career, I meant his career with Gloucester, because he is now moving on to a new adventure with the Suntory Sun Goliaths after being a stalwart for the Premiership club. In this episode, he talks us around how he first got into the Gloucester team, any advice for younger players in similar situations, and then we go in depth into what he goes about doing on a daily basis to sustain the life of a Premiership rugby player. He's been around, he's been a one club man, and he's been with that club for nearly 10 years now. And so it really is a good insight to the work, the dedication and the commitment that you have to make to keep playing such a physical sport at such a high level. I really enjoyed this chat with Tom. But before we get into that, I just want to give a quick shout out to CallumJ97, who gave us a 5-star review saying, "Brilliantly consistent podcast." I'm not overly sure about how brilliantly consistent we are, but I would say we're brilliant. Anyway, he says, "I was never a fan of podcasts, but this one changed my mind. It's brilliant. Has a very good range of guests, topics, and conversations with a consistent high standard of quality. Was behind with them episodes, but have recently binge listened to them whilst commuting or doing uni work and caught up. Writing this comment after listening to episode 117 with Dr. Mike Israetel, and this episode was absolute top notch. I'd recommend this episode and all of them to anyone who is into fitness or rugby. CallumJ97, if you can prove that it is you, shoot me an email, tom@tjstrength, and I will hook you up. Anyone else that wants to get hooked up can just go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, or whatever podcast service you use, click the 5 stars, type up a quick review, it'll take you less than 2 minutes, or just screenshot the episode and tag us in your Insta stories @tj.strength or @rugbymuscle. Cool. Let's get into this episode now. This is episode 120. Hopefully you guys will learn a lot from Tom Savage, Gloucester rugby legend. Boom. So we are live with Tom Savage of Gloucester Rugby. Sav, I've already bigged you up. And so if you can just give us like one sentence to sort of describe yourself now, what would you say?
Well, thanks for the introduction. I haven't heard it myself, but I'll take your word that it's very nice.
Yeah, it is, mate.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so, like you said, name's Tom Savage. I'm currently in my 8th season with Gloucester Rugby. I've been plugging away there for a long time now, and I'm just shy of 200 games. Unfortunately, the fixture list is going to beat me to not being able to make that. But I'm up there in the 190s, so I've had a pretty good stint at it over the last 8 years. And I'm moving on this year to a Japanese club, Suntory Sun Goliaths. So it's exciting times for me and my rugby career at the moment.
That is awesome, dude. So 190. How many caps are you at right now?
I think it's either 192 or 193. A couple of niggles this year basically have done me of reaching that nice round number. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but I've had plenty of good times in that jersey. So I'm trying not to get too disappointed about it.
Yeah, I don't think many people would consider 190 plus Premiership caps as or Premiership and European caps as not a good thing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but you know what it gets like. You sort of see yourself approaching a milestone like that, and you think, oh, it'd always be nice. That is sort of like equates to sort of like 25 games a year for 8 years, and you just think that would be a really nice milestone to hit. But yeah, it's unfortunately I've run out of time.
Back when you started, did you ever actually consider, like, did you create a goal of like a cap number or anything like that, or is it just this is just the way it's worked out?
No, definitely not. I think. As your rugby career progresses, really, I think your goals change. Like when you're immediately ousted into the sort of that professional environment, you want to do is be involved. So breaking through for a bench or a start is your main goal. And then after that, and when you're getting regular games, it's maintaining that starting jersey or or being involved in the squad. So I think, yeah, it's one of those things, and it's quite often it's not until you might reach one of those numbers that you become actually aware of it. So it wasn't until it wasn't until this year that I probably looked into that, and I was like, I knew I was approaching those numbers. But yeah, I remember now, like back in the day, I think I remember hitting 50 and no one even mentioned it to me because I think at Gloucester at the time, you had so many guys reaching good numbers of caps, and it's one of those clubs that's had a lot of guys who have been around for a long time. So you've got guys, I think the most professional games ever is almost 270. So a mere 50 was just laughed at back in the day. But now, yeah, I think kept more of an eye on it once I made that 100 mark. And it's a nice achievement to make.
It is, man. That's awesome. So let's go back to, like you said, when you first was sort of trying to get into a bench spot and whatnot. Let's talk about how you first got into Gloucester. So where did you start out playing?
Yeah, so I think my first season was, it was 10-11 or 11-12. You can't quote me on that, but the year before that, in my last year at university, I was studying at Hartbury College. So the university there and Gloucester's training base is connected to that university campus. So
yeah,
the university side of rugby was going really well for me. And there was a coach at the time who was running Gloucester's Academy who would come in and help out with some Hartbury sessions. So then there'd been a few injuries at Gloucester, and they needed some extra lads, just some training meat to go down and help out. And then after I went and did that, they were quite impressed with what I delivered in those sessions. I got the odd A-League game. And then in my last year at uni, they said, there's no contract for you here to come into our academy, but we'd almost like you to train alongside the team. And then if you go really well, there could be a contract further down the line for you. So I thought, yeah, I jumped at the chance of that. I got onto their full pre-season. And that was just a real eye-opener for me, because it sort of showed me going from university level onto that full professional outfit, what's required of you sort of physically, fitness, gym, nutritionally, level of detail in and around the rugby stuff. So it gave me a real head start. And then by the time the next season rolled around, I'd been offered a contract by Gloucester, and it almost gave me that head start. So instead of my first year at the club acclimatising and getting used to professional rugby, I already had that foot in the door, having a year of conditioning in their system under my belt. So my first year, I was quite fortunate. I think I played, it was a World Cup year, and we had one or two guys away, and I think I played 18 games in my first year. So it was nice. A big level jump for me. But yeah, it was a good way to be thrown in the deep end almost. And it was kind of a sink or swim. And yeah, luckily I came out the other side of it, and it went really well.
Talking about like this sort of the deep, being thrown in the deep end, what were the biggest differences that you did notice transitioning from Hartbury, which is, that's the highest level of university rugby you get in the country, to now, playing for a fully professional premiership team? What are the biggest differences in terms of pre-season and in terms of how they handle themselves off the field as well?
Yeah, it was definitely, I think whatever you were used to, it was definitely like another 30, 40, 50% on everything you were used to. So you had to be like, playing university rugby, we had a really good system at Hartbury, and you had a lot of good players in and around you. And you had to just go in there and play to that system, and you play well, because we were always a lot stronger than a lot of the other opposition we come against. But I think just the physicality, the fitness, I think, yeah, maybe like a 30% improvement in all those levels as a whole almost. And then the game understanding and things like that, and the role within your side. So the layers of detail that got added onto that rugby. So yeah, in my first couple of years, it was a lot of homework. The level of sort of analysis that you do increased massively, because at that top level, the game's getting filmed from sort of six angles now, and you come in on a Monday and you open up your file from your information about that game, and you can see everything you've done from an attempted charge down to third man in at a ruck, to whether that's effective, a dominant shot, second man here. So yeah, it's just that level of detail, and nothing is missed, and everything in rugby you can think about, you've got somewhere to go, or it's been thought about. So yeah, I'd say that's a massive area of difference for it, really.
Was that a big shot to the old ego? Like, or was that expected? Because I always find that when I played, like, watching my game tape back, I was never anywhere near as good as what I thought I was in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I just think as long as you... Yeah, I think that your attitude is the massive thing to that. Like, you've just got to go in with that willingness to learn. And obviously, you're not going to be as... When you go in there, you're not going to be as good as guys that have done it for a number of years. And it's all experience. So you've almost got to be like a sponge and go in there and soak up as much information as you can every single day. And if you... I think if you go in that with the right mindset, you've got good coaches in around you, but you can learn off the other players that are around there at the time. And yeah. I look back at a lot of the senior guys, and if you go in with the right attitude, they're willing to help you out. They're willing to spend 10, 15 minutes with you at the end of a session, putting extra time in with you because you're helping their game, and they know at the end of the day, you're keeping them on their toes now. Like, I look at young boys coming through our system, I think, Christ, if I'm not performing well in training at game time, this young lad wants to come and take my jersey. So yeah, it's good from a team level that you can learn off them, but at the same time you're making them better as well.
Yeah, and I think you almost have, because you're thrown in a deep end, you kind of have no choice but to get rid of your ego anyways, right? Because you've gone from uni rugby straight into, you know, premiership level, and there's no way you can have an ego, but it'd be absurd to go in there thinking that you're better than everyone else there.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think those people don't really last very long in sport, if I'm honest. I think, yeah, you've got to go in there and you've got to want to improve all the time. You've got to sort of have like that growth mindset and be coachable, because you might have done something that worked for you when you're at uni, but let's be honest now, you're at the levels higher. What was deemed as a good carry at uni was if maybe you made a line break and you made 20 metres, where at that premiership level, if you've carried off a touchline, you've cut four defenders out and made 2 metres, that all of a sudden is classed as a good carry and you've created quick ball. So the measurements of what is good and what is bad are a lot different, if you know what I mean. But as the level increases, obviously the level of competition around you and the people you're playing at the weekend does as well. So yeah, you need to be fully prepared that you might have been absolutely ripping up trees at uni, but it's probably not going to happen when you go up to that next level.
Yeah, that's like a recurring theme I've found on when I've been getting guests on here. It's like, it's not about sets and reps and stuff or any sort of one physical aspect, but being coachable. And you said it there. That's like one of the biggest things to allow a player to become successful, I think.
Yeah, it is exactly that. Because if you just think, I think even since I've been playing professionally now, it's my 8th season with Gloucester, but the game has improved. I think if the Gloucester team now played the Gloucester team from 8 years ago, we would probably put 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 points on them, because rugby as a whole has just improved that much in that time. Defensive systems have improved, so the team from 8 years ago might not score any tries, and attacks have got loads better. So you have to improve every single year as a player, or you're just going to get left behind. Or there's a younger, better model waiting in the wings that's going to overtake you. So yeah, I think gone are the days where you can just take a standstill on those things and think you're good enough, because you know, I think you'll very quickly get left behind.
Yeah, very much a case of like, what have you done for me lately? Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're not going to improve in that environment, I think you'll very quickly get found out.
For sure. All right. So, have you got any advice for younger players that are finding themselves in like a similar scenario? Maybe they're in a uni with an attachment to a rugby team, or maybe they're just in the vicinity of one of these academies and stuff when you were like 17 to 19, or maybe just advice for like a younger you.
Yeah, definitely. I would just say I come through quite an unconventional route in terms of I didn't play any England age groups. I wasn't in an academy set up or anything like that. I came from quite a, I wasn't from a rugby hotbed or anything like that. So just one first things first, I think if you're good enough and you've got the desire and the drive, I think you'll always make it, and there might always be an opportunity present itself, and then it's down to whether you take it or not. And then just be sort of the hardest worker there. Like all those effort areas that don't require any skill, put the time into those things that you need to improve on. But all things like getting off the floor in a game, chasing back when the ball's in the air, all that unseen stuff that you might not get credit for is honestly, someone will be watching and you'll get the rewards you deserve off of that. And it's that unselfishness that someone, that the actual person that you need to impress, that might be the coach or the selector, will see that stuff. So yeah, and just keep plugging away at it really, and don't give up if you have got aspirations to go on and play at a higher level.
Yeah, that's huge. It's like, and those are the things that make a team successful, like those chasing the ball down and doing all those unseen things. They make a team successful. And if you're a part of a successful team, like you were at Hartbury, that's also going to help you be noticed. Like if you guys were getting dicked on every week for Hartbury, then Gloucester probably wouldn't have come calling for any of you guys to help out.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think, and that sort of drive and desire and things like that you can create as a team, whether that's in your school team or your age group team that you go and play with at the weekend, I think that you're all going to help each other. And it's ultimately the better the team does, the more the individuals are going to benefit off the back of that.
Yeah. Did you enjoy all that hard work? Because that's one of the things that all of our mutual friends ever said about you, was that like you were by far the hardest working guy, like in training and in all aspects of the game. So did you get a lot of enjoyment from it, or did you just know, hey, this is what I want to do to become a professional rugby player?
Yeah, I do enjoy all the aspects of training, and I'm like, I know some people dread pre-season. I enjoy all those aspects really. I think just because I think you can see the effort you put in, you definitely get out. So I actually enjoy seeing something I've worked on, whether it's a rugby specific skill that you're just putting 15 minutes in extra a week, all of a sudden that's had a knock on effect, and you've got that turnover, or you've made that dominant collision that you wanted to in a game. Or now when you come in, you've been worked hard all pre-season, and you're seeing that your top meters per second or your bounce to feet or something like that's improved. And I always felt but taking it back to when I was working my way through the ranks or trying to get noticed playing uni rugby and just going on to the professional game, I sort of felt like I was a long way behind because I didn't start playing until I was a lot later. I was sort of having to constantly overtake guys. So I thought that the harder I worked, it would hopefully always pay off. So yeah, that's why I was always quite committed on those fronts.
Yeah, I think it's something people have to tell themselves. Like I don't have any time as a coach for people that don't ever want to do any fitness. Like, because I get that it's hard, but if you put the hard work in, that makes everything else in the game that you enjoy it that much easier. And if you tell yourself it, like, we're in an age where that hashtag the grind and all that shit is like really glorified, but it's not a grind if you enjoy it, because you're doing it for a specific purpose.
Yeah, exactly that. I think you can get, and ultimately going out and playing rugby on the weekend, to go out and grind out a win, you're going to have to take yourself to quite a dark place. So if you, the more you get used to that, whether it's a grueling fitness session or whether you know what you've got to get out of it, it's only going to make that a little bit easier. And then if there is a big area of your game you want to improve, it's all well and good being able to do that one off, but then you need to be able to, the repeatability of that is massive. And the more you improve, or the more you're able to produce that consistently, you're just going to get better and better.
Yes, mate. I absolutely agree with that completely. And do you think that's sort of thing is what's helped you like stay on for so many, like you say, and get into the 190s? Did you say it's 8 or 9 years now with Gloucester?
Yeah, 8 years. Yeah, 8 years. Eight seasons.
So yeah, do you think that sort of mindset's helped you get so far, or is there something else?
No, definitely. I think it's definitely when I initially broke through, I had a little bit of luck with, I think you have to have a little bit of luck these things as well. A few guys, there was an odd guy got injured, there's some change in the team, and then all of a sudden they trusted me to do a job, and sort of I've given a chance and I took it. And then since then, you sort of just, I think if you're always looking to improve, you're like kind of never, even when you look back and reflect and think I've had a good season, you'd always have like a week off and be like, right, I just need to improve on what I've done. So yeah, continually trying to improve really, it was a massive one, I'd say. And yeah, as long as you're looking to do that, I think you will.
Yeah, and so piggybacking on that, how do you think the game, you said the game has changed quite a lot, like you said the team now would smash the team from when you first started.
Yeah.
How has the game changed for you as a player?
Yeah, I just think, in all areas, I just think it's probably got more physical. Everyone, no matter what number's on your shirt now, in attack, everyone's required to be skillful and things like that. So I just think, yeah, the game has improved for the better. But yeah, mm-hmm. I just think collisions are probably bigger, guys are fitter and things like that. I just think it's all those little areas like we spoke about earlier. I wouldn't say you could put it on one thing, but yeah, just people's ability to defend, plays, and yeah, all different aspects have improved, really. I think across the board, strength, conditioning, the actual approach to games and things like that has improved, and the professionalism has improved as well.
Yeah, I think from what I can see in Premiership level rugby, is like the biggest thing I notice now is the importance of every individual in the ruck. Like, it's mostly just one-on-one. Like, if you're a defender, it's probably just one guy in, if that, and then it's just a 14-man line of wall that you're trying to break, which makes that game so much more physical with the collisions and with, like, every single ruck.
Yeah, exactly that, and especially depending on what system a team is running. Like, if you're carrying the ball these days, you're never carrying it into one man. You're very likely going to have two guys, one taking you low, one taking you high. And then you wouldn't want to clear that ruck out with any more than two men, sometimes one, and then depending on the strength of the carry. So all these things are like, yeah, it's just whoever can get the numerical advantage, really. And teams, like you say, that they're, once that two guys are in the tackle having a contest, the guy that's taken the man up top has had a good fight there, and then the other guy has rolled away and bounced to his feet, and you're attacking against 14 men again. So yeah, and also the level of analysis, I think, has built up year on year as well. And yeah, teams, if they can spot a weakness, they'll certainly go after it.
And with that in mind, you said the strength and conditioning has really improved a lot as well. How has that been reflected in, like, from what you did when you first started on to now? I mean, not necessarily just for you, like where you are at in your career, but in just in general terms of like how the game is treated differently with the stuff that you do in the gym.
Yeah, I think like in pre-season, things like that, they kind of know now through, I think when I first started, they're just beginning to use GPS data. So now they've almost got eight, nine years of that. And they know almost what is required of you per game, how many high-speed efforts you're going to need to make, what sort of distance you need to be covering, and things like that. So when you get in a pre-season, they can tailor-make that for each position to know each week you need to cover this, because this is going to mimic a game week, and then this session is going to mimic how you're going to feel in a game. So there's lots of like areas like that, and you can get that out of, instead of just being like, right, today we're going to run 5k, we need to know, like S&Cs will be like, we need to cover this distance and these many high speed efforts to replicate, whether you're chasing a kick, whether you're chasing a kickoff, whether you're retreating in defense. So yeah, I just think all those areas, and then around the gym stuff, I think it's just much more position specific. So backs and forwards split, and you'll just have a lot of stuff that's going to suit whatever position you're in, really.
So a lot more sort of special strength work to mimic different movements or fill in gaps that you would be missing that you're not performing in a game and stuff, or?
Yeah, definitely. So I just think like even stuff like neck strength for all positions, and then plyos is always there and important, but then some of these fast guys in the backs now, their legs will always sort of be strong enough. So now that's just about how quick we can get them, the repeatability on that, how good you can get their CMJ and things like that, just to make them as explosive as possible. And then same with forward. So you cycle your strength phases and your power phases in. But yeah, just almost, it's so personalized now down to how it's monitored and tracked. You know what every individual has and what his needs might be.
Yeah, for you as a player, that must be huge, because it's like, especially, and then that ties into the GPS stuff, because it's like, it's who did I have on? I had Dr. Jacob Reed on, who's working with USA Rugby when they were first doing that GPS stuff and data collection. And it's just like, you've got all this data and you don't really know what it means quite yet. You just know that these people are successful and these people aren't, but is that just a coincidence? And now you're saying that, like, you've got direct feedback of, like, this is exactly what we want from you, and, you know, there's a better relationship between the coach, the strength and conditioning coach, and the head coach and stuff like that, so that you can figure out exactly how to monitor recovery and ability to keep performing and stuff.
You're exactly right, because like you said, there's, I think, before, maybe in the early days where they were using that, they had all this information. They knew how far people were going. They knew how fast people were going, but they had nothing to sort of compare that to when it comes to the game stuff. So now they've got years on years of this data. They can use it sensibly, and they can tailor make training. So every week you're basically trying to peak for Saturday. So yeah, you can use it as a monitoring tool to manage your load, as well as knowing whether you've hit your targets at the weekend. And then they know normally if you hit your physical targets, you're not going to be far off probably winning that match.
Nice. I like that a lot. That's cool. And then in terms of the gym stuff, you say it's a lot more individualized by position and stuff, but is it also individualized, like, per person, per position? Because I'm assuming that, like, someone who's built like you isn't doing the same as, like, a beanpole newbie, the 18-year-old that's trying to make the squad as a lock as well, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So obviously you've got, like, yeah, it's all individualized like that. So the sort of, there's maybe like six strength and conditioners, and some that just work with that group of young guys, and some that are working with the first team guys. And it chops and changes where in pre-season you can maybe get like three or four lifts in a week, whereas in season you might be lucky to get one lowers and one uppers in, depending if you're playing. And it's just, I suppose, in season it's just about management and trying to get yourself as fit as you can be for that weekend. So some weeks some guys might have a niggle all week, they might not get one lift in because the rugby is much more important. But if you're all fit and well, you'll get your lifts in. And yeah, it's just about almost maintaining that hard work that you've put in over the off season. So I'd probably say that's when you're probably coming to your peak of your physical gains you can make, and then it's all about maintaining that during the season.
Yeah, so let's dive into that off season sort of stuff. Are you governed by the guys at Gloucester for your off season? And then how long do you have before you hit pre-season? What does that sort of look like?
Yeah, so for example, if I was just going Gloucester year to Gloucester year, the RPA now, I've got it, so, which is the rugby, so that's like the governing body for professional rugby players in the UK, the Rugby Players Association, you get 5 weeks off. 2 weeks of that is rest, and 3 weeks of that is sort of training that is implemented by your club. So that might be like two runs and two or three weight sessions a week, depending on your specific needs. Again, some guys might need loads of weights. Some guys, they might be able to go easy on the weights. Let's just keep the weight off, depending on what you like. And then you come in for pre-season, you probably do some sort of a fitness test. And then at Gloucester, it's really good that a lot of our strength and conditioning based, a lot of our fitness sessions are, we do con games, so we've always got the ball in the hand, and it'll be something specific, so you can get a game designed to get your high meters in and like your accelerations, but you get the ball, you play a lot with the ball, and then you'd have like maybe a speed and power day. We have sleds and evasion stuff where you might be dodging pads and then and powering through stuff, again just to improve your speed and carry power. And then throughout the week, you probably look to do three or four weight sessions in a pre-season.
Nice. And so specifically for you, what are you like? You're not a small lad, Sav. So like, are you still trying to work a lot in the gym to hold on to that, or are you like, right, I'm big enough to play my position and play it well. I've just got to work on my aerobic work or whatever it is to try and get the meters under my legs and maintain that.
No. So I mainly just go for mainly strength and power stuff now. So it'd be like 4.5s, 5.5s on sort of on a compound exercise, and then or 5.3s on that sort of stuff. Because I'm gone are the days now where I'm chasing, trying to put loads of weight on, and just trying to make sure my strength is as maximal as possible, and my power is really good, because I think those are the things that correlate straight onto the pitch. And then making sure you're as fit and as explosive as you can be on the pitch, and just doing. We did lots of carry power based stuff this preseason. I think it's worked really well in, like we were talking about earlier, what is classed as a good carry now is if you sort of win the gain line, you might make 2 or 3 meters.
Yeah.
The effect that has on speed of ball and things like that is massive in the game. So if you can just fight for every meter, it makes a massive difference.
So just driving through that contact, keeping that power there rather than just one sort of explosive movement.
Yeah, definitely. And then being able to be fit enough and strong enough to repeat that consistently. I don't know, like you could be carrying, some of the back row guys are carrying up to 20, 25 times a game now. So some of the workloads of people, as ball in play increases, like you've seen over the last few years, you need to be able to repeat that a number of times.
And then how do you find that you can sort of recover from that? Because that's real high stress stuff, like trying to work for those sort of outputs. Is there anything specifically that they institute for you guys to do for recovery?
Yeah, we get, they kind of leave it to, they educate the young guys on sort of what the options are, but they'll leave it to sort of the older guys to do what works for them. Because obviously if you've been playing for that long, they sort of trust in that you've got a system in place. So food wise, that's massive. We have a chef at the club now who feeds us breakfast, snack and lunch. We've got a nutritionist that works full time, where so we have skin folds and DEXAs to make sure you're in good shape all the time. If you were sort of fluctuating, they would flag it up and you're probably doing something wrong at home. And then in terms of, you've probably seen things like massage guns, recovery pumps for the legs, those are all available. Massage at the club, pool recovery, getting 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep in are all just crucial things. So make sure you're ticking all their boxes, really, and doing whatever works for you.
And as you said, not that I would call you one of the older guys, but if you said that they're sort of leaving you up to it, what's your favourite, or what do you go for?
Yeah, I've got a pair of the recovery pumps for the legs, and I just think they're brilliant for in the evening when, instead of just being sat on the sofa watching TV, you can be sat on the sofa with those on your legs, and they're like flushing out your legs as they fill out and pump out. Massage gun is another great one that you can have on your sideboard at home in any little tight bits. Again, if you're sat on the sofa, you may as well have that there doing something proactive. And then I like to get to the pool, some pool recovery as often as I can, really. And once a week, I do a reformer Pilates class.
Yeah, you do.
Just to kind of stay as sort of core activated and as sort of supple as I can be for a big man that probably isn't actually that supple.
I love that, mate. I want to see you on a reformer. I think that's like, do you just do a regular class with all like, and are you the only guy in there?
No. It's not quite like a legs, bums and tums. No, luckily we book out. I've been going a few years now, so we book out an hour with one of the instructors rather than embarrassing ourselves with some of the other people that are half hour away.
Embarrassing at all, mate.
You haven't seen me in the gear.
I want to, mate. I want to see this. I want to see your Lulu's doing your reformer work. That thing would be awesome.
Yes, sir.
You touched on sleep as well. You said like 8, 9, 10 hours. How realistic is that? And how many boys actually get that much sleep in? And if you do, like, how much of a difference do you think that makes?
Massive. I think you only got to have like a bad night's sleep to realise. It's one of those things, you might not realise how much difference it makes when you're getting the good night's sleep. But it only takes one or two bad night's sleep, and then you realise that you're probably struggling for training the next day. So, we've been educated on like a nutritionist runs like some recovery meetings and the importance of sleep and how deep you want to get that into. But yeah, I'd try and be down tools and be in bed for 10 o'clock and then set the alarm for the same time every day. So I'm up and ready to go to just get into a routine. So that's what they just talk about you having is sticking to a good routine and then living by that. And then it's sort of, you haven't got an excuse then come training day why you've put in a bad performance, or come match day why you might not be playing to the level you want to.
Yeah, for sure. And then nutrition-wise, do you have any, like, what sort of guidelines? I'm assuming you just plough in the carbs and stuff, but is there anything specifically that you wouldn't have thought or that other people wouldn't have thought that what happens for what you guys eat in a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so the nutritionist at the club is he's actually an ex-player, James Hudson. He's really good. He's really proactive for the boys. So you obviously get fed really well at the club and kind of educated on what you need sort of fuel-wise for the week and things like that. So our training days are like marked out as like how hard they're going to be in sort of like a traffic light system. And then you'll be told, given like a guideline, depending on your size, how much you need to refuel for that. So your protein portion is pretty easy, but then it's the carbs where people can get wrong in terms of having too much or too little. So Monday would be a light day. Tuesday's really hard, so you've got to refuel after that. Wednesday's normally off. Thursday's quite short and sharp. But then Friday, you're refueling for the game. Saturday's a bit of a different one because it's normally a game day, so some guys don't really like to eat. Some guys like to fuel up. Some guys like to feel hungry. Some guys don't. So that'd be a mix and match.
Yeah.
And then depending on your minutes, you eat an amount on Sunday, Saturday night, and then you have to just adjust that on your minutes on the Sunday. So, and then the process all starts again.
Yeah, but it's like it's a traffic light system in terms of like just to keep it real basic, but in order to keep it like individualized, I guess, for how much work you get through.
Yeah, right? Exactly that. And then there's labels on the food at the club on portion size and things like that. So you'll have an idea of not necessarily, it's not like a macro breakdown, but he does it in, he uses like a flame system. So one flame would be like 15 grams of carbohydrate. And then you could get like a good idea that half a cup of this or one scoop is going to work out so that much, and you can play it up from there.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's an easier way of educating people from what they need to get, you know,
yeah,
so they can govern themselves. I like that, mate. What do you use to carb up, to fuel up for the day before a game? Do you have a particularly like large carbohydrate meal, or is it like spurs throughout the day?
Yeah, I used to, so you probably aim to have, I'd eat the day before a game, I'd aim to eat five times. So I'd have big breakfast, go away, do our team run, and have a big lunch that would be normally at the club, an afternoon snack, big evening meal, and then a pre-bed snack. And that would all be, that would be big compared to what I'd have any other time for the week, just fueling, just so you've got your energy levels are high, you've fueled up overnight, and then you've only got to fuel up a little bit on that game day, and you know, you saw almost the work's been done the day before, so yeah, sort of just eating for your needs in terms of that. And I used to have like, I used to be like, oh, I'm always spag bowl on a night before a game and things like that, until you can get, when you've done it a long time, you can get spag bowled out. So now I almost like fuel to the amount I need, but aren't as specific on a dish, if you know what I mean. And I also used to find that if you went on an away trip where you're eating in a hotel, if they didn't have exactly what you wanted, you could lose your head. So, yeah, that's just sort of an adjustment I made with being a little bit more experienced.
Yeah, I like that. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to put forward to my guys is, like, it doesn't have to be one giant carbohydrate meal. Like, if you spread that out throughout the day, it makes your life so much easier.
And, yeah, definitely. For sure. And then, you can have, just a big shake before bed, and that's going to just tide you over until the next day. So that'll set you off on the right track.
Boom, mate. Is there anything else that you've sort of adjusted nutritional-wise since you first started playing?
Yeah, I think you're always learning. I think new data comes out and the nutritionists are always pretty up-to-date on it, but obviously you need, depending on what injuries you've had, so like collagens and different collagens. Sorry, someone was just trying to call me. Yes, things like collagens, omega-3s, things like that, just to look after your body, because I think like the protection and staying fit is ultimately the most important thing. So anything you can do or take to help improve that is massive. Yes, and just basically educating yourself on those things and making sure you're doing everything you can to keep yourself fit and on the pitch as long as possible.
Yeah, man, and you've succeeded in that. What do you think's your biggest physical aspect that helps you like sort of stand out and make it as a rugby player for you?
I'd say if we were talking like consistently in rugby, I'd say I'm a consistent player. I'd say I always look to go out and I put a lot of emphasis on going out and performing at a certain level each week instead of being an 8 1 week and then dipping a 3 to the next. It's not that's not the place you want to be. And then, yeah, just being as fit and physical as I possibly can be. I obviously play quite an attritional position. So if you can go and impose yourself on the opposition, and whether that's physicality around carry, tackle, clear, all things that I pride myself on being good at. And then just having your leadership qualities up there as high as possible and being someone that leads by the way you go out, and not only the way you behave in the week, but the way you go out and handle yourself on the pitch, I think is massive.
Yeah, it is, mate. And I think you do that really well. Like, and even in answering that question, it's just consistency, like being a well-rounded player in your position is huge. And I think people want to see the flash stuff, and you know, we're always drawn to flash stuff, but what you've done is speaks for itself, and it makes you stand out in that way on its own as a rugby player, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of those things. It's like, well, even if, for example, if you were an unbelievable tackler, there isn't a ceiling point on the world's best tackler, is there? So even the things that you're good at, I don't think there's no ceiling point on it. You couldn't be too good at tackling. So even the things that you're great at, I think you've still got to consistently work on to make them an even bigger part of your game. And then I'm sure once you've done that, you can bounce to feet, get in position and do that again. So then there's a repeatability of that as well. So yeah, it's one of those things you can't complete rugby. It's an ever evolving game, and you can only keep pushing yourself as an individual.
Yeah, you can't complete rugby. I like that, mate. That's awesome. Is there anything else that the team does, or you yourself do in the gym that maybe like a lot of people listen to this wouldn't think would really apply to professional rugby players and stuff?
Like obviously different guys have different things that work for them, but obviously things that just learning off others. So like 3 or 4 years ago when John Furr joined the club, he's moved on to Bristol now, but he suggested to me joining this Pilates class, and he was like, look, I've done this for a large number of years. We were doing it with the All Blacks way back, and he was like, I've done it, and it helped keep me fit and things like that. So I was like, right, this guy is a legend of the game. I'm going to listen to him. And so me and him went to this class sort of 3 or 4 years ago, and I've been going every week since. Just having your core strength right up there. Neck strength is massive, because obviously you're not always going to be making the tackles. You want to get your head on the right side every time, but unfortunately when that person's moving, or as an elusive as people can be these days, you're going to get it wrong every now and then. So yeah, getting your neck strength up there, and then working on all those little things, really, whether that's activating yourself before you go for a gym session. So go in there, if you've got a gym session at 11 o'clock, get in there at 10:30, have a loosen off, activate yourself, warm up properly, and then come the end of the day, making sure your recovery is top notch, whether that's your stretch, your foam roll, your pull, however far you want to take it, whatever your routine is, make sure you're ticking all those boxes, really.
Yeah, so just the overall level of detail for sort of every aspect, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I just think if you've got an area you need to improve on, or every day when you're running you've got tight hips, or you've got a lower back complaint, instead of just moaning about that or saying you've got that, you can easily educate yourself on how you're going to loosen them hips or do some core exercises that might take some of the stress off that lower back. And then all of a sudden you can go out and you can just go and perform, worry about performing rather than any of the niggles that you might have.
Yeah, I think it's massive. Like, if you have any weakness, the higher level you want to play at, that weakness is going to be exposed.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those things that you want to be able to, because if you can't perform in the training, you're not going to get the opportunity to go ahead and perform in games, because sometimes the training can be hard enough, and then that's even meant to just be the base layer to get in towards a game on the weekend. So,
yeah, sweet, man. That's super interesting. And is there anything that you have really found as your own sort of go-to in the gym that sort of helps you perform the way you want to perform? You know, I know it's like sort of addressing everything, but is there one thing that you're like, "But I implemented this." Now we've said Pilates, but I implemented this, and this has really helped me, like, either stay consistent or helped you, you know, survive at that level, or whatever it is.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes, even when, like, as the season gets on, you probably feel your body deteriorating a little bit. But even if on that Monday morning when you're going in the gym and you know it's lowers, I think the first couple of sets on your squats is probably the worst thing. You may say you're doing box squat or a rear chain exercise. I just think just battling through for that session is going to pay you dividends. I think, one, even if you're feeling horrendous on a Monday still from the weekend's game, just go and get moving, because that is almost, I feel like your body's hungover from playing. And if you don't fix that hangover on Monday, you're only going to feel hungover on Tuesday as well. So I always think just go in there, no matter how I'm feeling, I'll always go out. And I think there's normally a good number of the boys in the gym that we can get a good buzz going. So I think, yeah, go in there, get moving, pushing weights out. All of a sudden, you've almost set yourself up nicely for the week. And then you can just tick those boxes as the week goes on, and you can start worrying about the performance once you've got the performance the following Saturday, once you've got your body ready right from the weekend before.
Yeah. So you're starting on the front foot.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, I think that probably gets your body battle hardened and ready for the game. And I think the more you do that, I think your body gets used to that level of bashing up. You're probably putting it through on the weekend, and then what's required for you the next week.
Yeah, both mentally and physically, I think it works both ways.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I think if you're sore, I think you can lie to yourself and you can say, "No, I'm not sore. I'm just going to crack on with this." And I think sometimes you've just got to do that.
Yeah, there's a difference between like hurting a little bit or just feeling a little bit lethargic versus being properly, like, because we hit on, you know, recovery and fatigue management and all that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to grab your nuts and just, you know, realize that it's not a case of managing that too much. It's a case of actually just getting in and getting all quality work done.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So, yeah, because ultimately, if you've chosen rugby as your hobby or your chosen sport, you're probably not going to be feeling 100% most of the time. So, no. Yeah, you're just going to have to crack on with it sometimes.
Yeah, mate. All right. Is there any other piece of advice that you would give for just our guys sort of listening that either just trying to play rugby at the highest level that they can? Yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, like, I think I touched on it earlier, just being like sort of be the hardest working player, like every single time, like those off the ball things, whether it's, yeah, just if a ball goes up in the air, it's no skill just to run hard, or if you're on the floor, bounce up and get through some more involvements in the game. Make sure you enjoy it. If you're not enjoying it, it's probably not for you. But no, rugby can give you whatever you want out of it. I think the more you progress, it's the game probably never stops giving in terms of how rewarding it is for being in that team environment. You become a better person as well as sort of a better athlete. And just keep going. And then if you have had some setbacks, whether that's through injury or disappointment on selection, yeah, just keep plugging away, because I think if you've got that desire to go well, I think an opportunity will always arise. And we've certainly got plenty of people in our team at the moment that have come through an unconventional path and they sort of just didn't give up. Whether you think about Ben Morgan, who's now had a great career with England and Gloucester, but he sort of got sacked off by Gloucester age group, found himself playing in Wales, worked his way up to the Scarlets, and then he was in a battle to play for Wales and England. So there's unconventional routes. You look at Jake Pledry, who's playing for Italy now. He got sacked off by Bristol. He was working in his dad's Subway for a couple of years, and he's played for Hartbury Saturday team 2 years ago. He's been picked up by Gloucester, and now he's looking to go to a World Cup. So,
yeah,
if you are good enough, there will be an opportunity there for you. I truly believe
that's awesome, man. And even if like you're still at that lower level and you only want to play that lower level, the more you put in, like the more harder you work, the better you can play, and the more you'll enjoy it anyway. Like if nothing else, the more involvements that you can get because of being fitter are going to make you enjoy the game more.
Yeah, exactly that, and you're going to get that feel good factor, and there's nothing better than going out whatever level you're playing at. It is still the same. It's just going out with your mates on the weekend, and it's hopefully going out there to win a game. I don't think it's much better feeling, really.
Yeah, man. Yeah, cool. All right, so last few questions to sort of round it off that I ask everyone, sort of quick fire round. Number one is a favorite supplement.
I would say omega-3 fish oils, because I think that the joint care is most important. And instead of saying protein, I think you can get that from a lot of other sources rather than relying on whey protein.
Yeah, that's the it's literally between random ones and whey protein, and then even whey protein, people are like, yeah, well, I have it because I cook with it.
Yeah,
so, yeah, cool. Favorite gym movement.
Is box squat.
Nice. How much you lift on that?
I've done the strength goal at our club is 2 times body weight, but they work that as an equation as opposed to just putting a certain amount on the bar. So for me, that would have been time about 115, 116. So 230 kilos for one, but I think my best ever was I did 220 for three.
Nice.
Just to about 90 degrees, so it's not arse to grass, but I've had a few knee issues in the past, so 90 is about my limit these days,
mate. That's a shit ton of weight. I'm okay with that only being like close to 90 degrees off of a box.
Okay.
That's impressive enough, dude. Cool. Favorite food?
Actually, Asian food is actually my favourite, so it's quite good that I'm going to Japan. So yeah, I'm a big sushi, noodles, ramen. So yeah, those are the things that tick the boxes for me.
Oh, and going to Japan, you're going to get a whole new level of that stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, I've heard good things about the food. So yeah, I'm expecting big things.
Hell yeah. And then finally, you're not the only rugby player going to Japan. There's a bunch of other players apparently going for some tournament. Who do you think is going to win the World Cup?
I obviously you want to say New Zealand are probably front runners, but I could see I'm back in England to do quite well, and I also think South Africa could upset quite a few people as well.
Oh, really?
I do think they've got the player pool to go out there and cause a bit of an upset, really.
Yeah,
Ireland probably won't do bad. I think they're the four that I think you're going to see do really well come World Cup time.
As long as England are up there, mate, we can hope.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. And if people want to follow you on social media, follow your new Japan adventures, what's your plug your Instagram?
Yeah, it's at Tom Savage. I think it's all lowercase. I'm actually getting a bit more into my Instagram at the moment. I'm on Twitter as well, but I think that's TC_Savage. But I'm more of a follower on there than I'm a tweeter. But no, I'm enjoying Instagram these days.
Awesome,
pictures,
mate.
Are better than writing, aren't they? So
absolutely, pictures 1,000 words, and you're not even allowed 1,000 words on Twitter, so
that's it.
All right, man, thanks for coming on.
Cheers. Now, thank you for having me.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this or any other episode of the Rugby Muscle Podcast, please feel free to share it with your friends or teammates. It's something, the little things like that that you can do that really do help the show grow. And the more we grow, the more we can help you guys out. Another thing that you can do is go ahead and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That only takes about 20 seconds. And it helps us grow and helps us spread the podcast to people that need it. If you're interested in stepping up your training, then visit rugby-muscle.com, where you can pick up 50 free rugby conditioning sessions, or you can join Team Rugby Muscle, where you get world-class strength and conditioning delivered directly to your phone. That's rugby-muscle.com for more information on all of that. Thank you guys for so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.